It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Alex, and Renee are here. We're going to talk about Apple settling its ebook lawsuit, the stories of Apple, maybe Samsung bidding for Nuance, the creators of the Siri text-to-speech engine, and a whole lot more. It's a Big Mac Break coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 407, recorded June 17th, 2014. I'm a tastemaker. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MACBREAK. And by Offset.com, a new brand from Shutterstock. Offset provides a collection of high-end, royalty-free photography and illustration from award-winning talent. To receive a buy one, get one free image on new accounts, go to offset.com/welcome/MACBREAK. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers the Apple world. Such a big, brave new world. Here with us to talk about it, Andy Inatko. He of the hat and sideburns. This time the hat's from Colorado University Boulder. He's got an Apple II. Look at that behind him. Hey, Andy.
Hey.
Good to see you.
I think it was a mistake to remove the cassette port from Apple desktop computers. I mean, I understand that it gets in the way for mobile, but you like to have that expandability.
Mm-hmm.
When I had my Apple II, I was very disappointed in the fact that I could not get all the lyrics and music from the Police if I just played the tape into the computer.
That, my friends, is Alex Lindsay. You can reach him at pixelcore.com for further questioning.
Sorry.
And also here, Mr. Rene Ritchie from iMore.com.
Solidarity with you, Leo.
Look at, he's wearing his Beats.
There we go. Now you won't look so lonely.
But those look good, do you think, those Beats? Do you think that makes you look like you're with it and hip?
It doesn't matter how I look, Leo. It matters how people think I look.
my real question on this is, did you just buy those?
We got them for some photography that we were doing because we like having nice looking pictures, and we had the same Beats picture over and over again. So I bought a pair so I could take a bunch of different.
How much did you pay for those fabulous Beats headphones?
An embarrassing amount, Leo. A destructive to my soul amount.
And do they sound really good?
I have not plugged them in yet.
So you are the ultimate Beats user. You're just buying them for the look.
I'm just going to walk around with a cordless like this. I think it looks very futuristic.
You know, it's so funny to watch the gyrations everybody goes through trying to explain why Apple bought Beats. The latest, of course, is Bono.
Bono said
it, Apple bought Beats for the personnel, for the people. Of course, I'm sure Bono's friends with Dre and Iovine, so.
Could be.
Yeah.
Maybe he wants to get purchased by Samsung.
I think an acquisition of two people for $3.2 billion is.
It's a lot of money.
That was signing bonus. I'm sorry.
I'm telling you.
We'll buy your company for $100 million, and then we'll pay you $3.1
billion. A billion is not what it used to be, and that's the truth.
It's an Apple billion.
It's an Apple billion or a Google billion or a Facebook billion. It's just not what it used to be.
What are they going to do? Buy Skybox instead? I mean, come on.
Yeah, right. You got all this money lying around on the floor. You got to do something with it.
Buy Nuance. That's a scary thing.
So that's the current rumor that Nuance is up on the market and have gone to hat in hand both companies that license Nuance technology, Samsung and Apple. Apple does not, now correct me if I'm wrong, does not do the voice recognition itself in Siri.
The rumor is not currently.
We don't know.
Right, but the rumor is Apple, of course, has their own team that does a lot of work on these kinds of things. It turns out they have the money to just have teams just doing, you know, guys thinking stuff up and guys backing them up. And so I think that they're, yeah, so the, I think that the concern for Nuance may be that, you know, you might want to sell while it's high before a lot of other people write a lot of other software.
So here's the deal with Nuance. Nuance had its own speech technology, but really is as much.
And they're the founders.
Pardon me?
I mean, these guys have been not
actually
the
founder of Nuance is now working at Google, but that's another story.
But I mean, but these guys. Well, I don't mean the founders, but these Nuance has been around. It's not like they came. They're not like a .com.
No,
whatever. I was
beg
using
to differ.
I was using Dragon software.
They bought Dragon.
Oh, did they buy Dragon?
They bought LearnOut. Okay. They bought all. Microsoft bought LearnOut, but they bought all. So here's the deal with Nuance. They had a fairly crappy voice. Yeah. Correct me. Andy's got the memory for this, I think, because he's a historian in the bunch. But they had a fairly and they're in Boston. They had a fairly crappy voice recognition engine. But Nuance ended up becoming a holding company, acquiring all of the companies in the space. By the way, also all the scanning companies in the space.
Also suing them into the point where they could acquire
them. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Is that right, Andy? Is that roughly my memory?
Yeah, pretty much. There's a time when there are at least two competing Mac speech products, and they were both bought, I think, by Nuance. And they actually kept their brands open for many, many years. I haven't checked recently, but yeah, it was almost like the end of The Godfather, where instead of shotgunning every other speech company, they just simply shotgunned them with money, and that seemed to do the trick.
And furthermore, the guy who, because Nuance's own voice did have their own voice recognition system. I'm looking at Nuance's article. The article, it was founded as Visioneer. Remember Visioneer?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In 1992?
Oh, yeah.
And the guy who did their original voice recognition, I believe, is now working at Google. So let's look at the history of this. So,
which is how Google got around all the patent stuff that's
right.
stopped everyone else from doing things.
That's right. So, oh boy, is it complicated. The name Nuance, the original Nuance was actually, I think, a good company. That guy has left. ScanSoft bought them in 2005. But where did ScanSoft come? That's the Kurzweil voice recognition engine. Ray Kurzweil developed it. He sold that in 1980 to Xerox, which became Xerox Imaging Systems, which became ScanSoft. In 1992, a company called Visioneer, remember the Visioneer scanner?
Yep,
right.
The Paperport, right. Actually, it was pretty cool stuff. They sold the hardware division to Primax in 99, acquired ScanSoft in 2001 from Xerox. They formed a company called ScanSoft. So confusing. And then they acquired Nuance in 2005, taking the Nuance name. So the company Nuance is only relatively recently Nuance. It was originally kind of, I guess,
I think what I was always connected to was Dragon, because Dragon is something that I got in 1998.
And that was from a different company
right.
in 98.
Yes.
So they acquired that technology, all the OCR companies.
They bought V-Lingo a couple of years ago.
That's right. So they combined everything into one big blob, and at least early on, Siri was licensed from Nuance. It even said so, I think.
Yes. I don't think they said so, but it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it still?
It's hard to tell. I believe there's still Nuance. At least there was of last year. There was still Nuance on Apple servers. But, you know, like Alex said, they have their own speech lab in Boston, and it's been profiled a couple times, and they're doing a lot of their own work there, and they still have the Siri team there. Originally it was said that Nuance didn't want to sell, that they had basically poison pills in effect to stop people from buying them. They were much more interested in licensing their technology. But now you have Carl Icahn as, you know, one of the principal shareholders of Nuance.
He's
also involved with Apple.
But also look at the 2-year stock price of Nuance. It's not good. It's been kind of going down. And that's, I think, an indicator. It's
they have Google in their space now.
Yeah, it's an indicator that the stock market at least didn't have much confidence in the future of Nuance, even with the Siri deal. Samsung uses Nuance as well in its own Samsung speech. Remember that Samsung, this is one of the reasons I don't like Samsung phones. When you get a Google phone, you have Google's voice recognition.
Right.
But Samsung overrides that with their own speech recognition. It's darn hard to turn that off.
S-voice.
Right. S-voice. I hate it. Truthfully, the Google voice recognition is, I think, the best in the space, mm-hmm. followed closely by Siri. So apparently Nuance is looking to unload for $6.1 billion. I bet you it's pressure from Carl Icahn.
Yeah, also awareness that that at this point, it's hard for a company like that to keep up with the firepower of Apple and Google and their ability to improve their own products and fight the patent wars, such that they might at some point have a company that's just worth about $100,000 if they set it out. They may as well just sell at this point and cash out.
Certainly, if Apple paid 3.2 for or three now, I guess, for Beats, they could pay six for Nuance.
If they felt like they needed it.
I mean, it depends on question is how far along Apple's own efforts are.
Because that also affects it. Because obviously, that Samsung has to continue to be competitive as well. So you can see why they'd want to buy it. And Apple, I think if Apple feels like they're really dependent on Nuance, they'd probably get into a bidding war with Samsung. So I think we'll find out.
So according to the Forbes article, customers include, besides Apple, Samsung, HTC, LG, Nintendo, Panasonic, Intel, Audi, BMW, Ford, GM, and Toyota.
They made sure they were the only option outside of Google.
But and in response to that, I think both Apple, Google, and actually include Microsoft in this, started working very hard, I think, on their own speech recognition technology. Google
Microsoft
has
bought TellMe.
Microsoft bought TellMe, but they also have done their own stuff. Xbox One is not TellMe, I don't think. I think it's its own internal stuff.
Well, that's a smart play, right? Like, you exist in the slack of the market until these giant companies can replicate and maybe even better your service.
Yeah, and then you sell as fast as you freaking can because your value is going to plummet when, they stop licensing.
And Apple, I think, obviously we've talked about this in the past, but Apple's pretty traditionally somewhat resistant to having outside forces provide core technologies.
Activist investor Carl Icahn typically gets involved. This is what Carl Icahn likes. Right. He likes to get in these situations where you got bidding wars, the price might be overvalued, and he can get out. He has, 19% stake, not 15. It's one of his biggest holdings. So thank God the eye of Mordor has turned from Apple and is now paying attention to Nuance.
Keep him distracted.
Yeah, distract him.
Extract value here.
Yeah. I don't think this really impacts anybody at this point. This is almost, I would guess, a fire sale that Apple, Google, and Microsoft.
I don't know if it's a fire sale yet, but it's definitely like they see the writing on the wall. The increased competition, with companies that have pockets they just can't compete with. It definitely seems like the right time for them to find a partner. It's a good time for Samsung to shore that up as well.
One of the advantages Google has in this respect is that they have a lot of voice samples. They're not loath, as Apple is and Microsoft might be, to send those recordings, those voice dictation, all of that stuff back to the home office and save it.
Right.
In fact, the rumor was that the Google for a while offered a free 411 service, Google 411. And the rumor was they did that to enhance their voice recognition because they killed it after a couple of years.
Well, and Google Voice transcriptions.
That's right. Not very good. YouTube transcriptions, too. Not very good. But I'm sure a big database that can get better and better. Yeah, in fact, when you get a Google Voice transcription, at least some of the time, they ask you, how did we do? Mm. Was that good? Would you like to correct anything? That would be useful. Apple bought the company that sold Dragon to Nuance. This is from the chat room. The company Novarus Technologies.
Yeah.
Dr. James Baker was the founder of Dragon Systems. Dragon was the best dictation system, I think, for a long time.
Very long time.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that for a long period of time, I couldn't move my hands well enough to type. And so I used it in 1998 through 2000 and pretty much to do anything that I had to do with the computer.
So this is a UK company that Apple secretly bought.
Apple buys company from time to time.
Secretly. Yes, that's right. Isn't that you sound like Tim Cook. You're channeling Tim Cook. Taking the acquisition took place last year, only announced in April of this year. The UK-based automatic speech recognition company, Novarus. That's really interesting because that indicates that Apple's going full speed ahead on doing its own thing, right?
And they're doing streaming voice now with iOS 8, and it's not hard to believe that once the hardware's up to par, maybe they'll start moving to on-device. I mean, it's going to be a big part of their future.
What's streaming voice? What do you mean by that?
So previously, you would say something, and then when you stopped speaking, it would take that what you'd said and transfer it to the Siri servers for voice to text. Now, as you're talking, it starts transferring the data immediately, so you don't have to wait to be finished, then wait for the transfer.
Yeah, Google's done that forever, and it's really a much... I have to tell you, the difference in experience is significant. If you speak and see it transcribed as you're speaking, and that's how Dragon used to work.
Right.
You get much more, the confidence level is much higher than if you have to, and this has happened to me so many times with Siri, you'll say a whole paragraph And then it'll say, sorry, I can't reach the server.
Purple, like, dot, purple dot, purple dot.
Well, and the Dragon software is so good at all of the things, of all the editing. And when you're editing, it's getting smarter. You know, so it's not just that it kind of spits something out and doesn't really know what happens. Every time you correct it, it's learning more about the way you use it. So the more you use it, the better it gets.
This is why I consider it a fire sale. That the big three, Google, Apple, and Microsoft, all have their own technology. Mm-hmm. So and, how much longer are they going
to
license?
There's a lot of inconveniences with the Dragon software because every time you change mics, it wants you to retrain it. You know, and it's because I understand that, but it's you get used to right. Google and Apple and just being able to pick it up and it just works. And you know, that's
Andy.
That's
do you ever use dictation to write your stuff?
Not really, because for I have tried to use a dictation software. But it seems as though my brain is hardwired to sound it out with my fingers as opposed to with my voice. Every time I try to do it, I can't do it as I can't create the same sort of first draft as I can with my hands.
What I find interesting is that the voice that I speak with and the voice that I write with are very different. You know, and it literally sounds like a different person is writing the article. If I like when I'm writing blog posts or whatever, if I do it with dictation, it's literally a different, whole different cadence than when I'm typing.
Did you?
I think it's more. It's more of a question of being able to read what you're writing, and you're sort of being your own editor as you're preparing this draft. And by the time you get midway through, you see the form that this is going to take and where you need to steer the horses to get them back into the corral at the end of the column. Whereas if I'm speaking, I'm certainly trying to think ahead and making sure that I'm actually going to an actual point. But it's hard for me to build that kind of structure over 1,000 words if I'm just speaking as opposed to using my fingers.
What was the – oh, here it is, the website. This is so cool. Dictation.io. This is another reason why companies like Dragon and others are going to have a problem. This is a website, Dictation.io. And I am now dictating to Dictation.io, but it doesn't seem to be hearing. Oh, yeah. It is hearing what I'm saying. Actually, you know, I think because I'm so far from the microphone, it's not doing a great job of this. Let me get a little bit closer and talk a little bit louder. This is actually doing exactly what you were talking about, Renee. It's streaming the dictation as we go. The beauty of this is you don't have to buy anything. It does this on the web as you're going, and it puts it in a text box that's fairly easy to just go in and edit. That's one of the things I didn't like about Dragon was you had to say stop, back, you know, and so forth. This is fairly easy to do a hybrid thing. You know what? It's doing a terrible job right now.
I was about to say, I was like, oh,
I have used it before with I was using it in my office with the microphone, and it worked much better.
Well, and I think that one of the things is it's not, it has to learn how to talk to you, but to do this really well and to do full emails and blog posts, you have to also learn how it likes to hear things. And so, mm-hmm. like the person who's actually
you
much
train
better
yourself, yeah.
Yeah, the person who's much better at this than I am is my father. My father's been dictating to a secretary since the early 80s.
Yeah.
And when you listen to him, he can do an entire contractual agreement that's like 12 pages long with a, you know, just sitting there going click, you know, this, period, comma, you know, da da da, and he'll every punctuation, everything, because he can just visualize it all, and he hands it to someone on the tape, and then it gets written out. But when he sits down and does it, like he did a test on mine, and without any training, and it was perfect.
Let me just read back to you what dictation.io thought you were saying. I like about Dragon's United States top back. You know what? This is doing a terrible job. Reviews did before with you know I was using it in my office with the microphone, and it works much better. When you have to learn how to talk, but your butt blog posts, you have to learn how it like to hear things in South Lyon, Michigan, 48182.
That's
secretary's sincerely 80s an animal. You listen to him, he can do an entire contractual agreement, the 12 pages long without, you know, this period, comma, every punctuation, everything. But it mean when online without any training, or was it just read? So, okay, I take it back. This thing sucks. No, but the fact that without buying any software, without any training,
we were able to create enormous amount of gobbledygook.
But it worked fine when I did it with a better microphone. It's obviously
the blog post
without any trading, it was able to do absolutely nothing useful.
Imagine trying to type that fast.
Yeah.
Not many people can keep it. Well,
I couldn't even think of
listening
that
to a keynote and trying to if I went back to my notes from WWDC where there are sections where I'm trying to write down exactly what someone is saying, that's about what it's going to look like.
Andy, are you doing a little freelance advertising in your spare time? Have you seen?
In the Unaway, when the wind is up, the waves are 10, sometimes 11 meters high.
Just walking through these doors makes you smarter. Dumb.
What's the story here?
Home to Canada's most famous animals.
Well, see, the mistake is that that guy is outside. So that's how you know it's not me.
I think this is this is the Canadian Tourism Board or something. I think intentionally they're duplicating your look. Do you not feel that?
I am a tastemaker.
By the way, maybe we'll have to ask our resident Canadian, what is Outaouais?
Outaouais, that's like outside Ottawa. You have the Ottawa Hull Outaouais region. It's just that whole area because it's close to the Quebec-Ontario border.
That is kind of like the nuanced version of Andy and Akko. Like, it kind of got it right.
Right.
It's cosplay Andy.
That's like it really looks, it's like Andy and Akko on Coke.
But really, seriously, who is there? Is there a look with the big hat and the big sideburns, or did they look at you and say, we can't get Andy, but let's get somebody who looks just like him?
Well, the question is, Andy, did they call you first? That's what we want to know.
Did you turn down Outaouais?
No. This is like when Mr. Dreyfus has to go check with his agent and say, now was I offered this commercial before someone decided to go with a sound alike, or did they just simply go straight there? Did they figure that we can't possibly reach Andy and Otto's price? It's way above our price range.
It's
when we go to the national ad, that's when we'll approach Andy's voice agent.
I get all the time emails from people say, hey, I saw you and it's always some because. All us heavy middle-aged men with gray hair look pretty much the same. So when I first got this email, I thought, oh yeah, no, that couldn't look. And then I played it, and it, my God, it did look like you.
It's just that if you only see me like once a week, I think the brain is sort of programmed to say, okay, sort of heavy set, sideburns, sort of a wide brim hat. That's good enough for a match. I have if you're a long time viewer of my Flickr stream, I have a running joke known as my BFF identification algorithm inside my camera, where sometimes I'll be like taking pictures and it'll be a guy who looks a lot like a friend I've had since junior high school. And it's not because they look necessarily like him, but because they're at least if you're writing a piece of software to identify somebody, you're going to fill them up with here are five identification points before you kick it to a human for confirmation. And for me, it's sideburns, and lovely hat.
I entered and BFF again, Andy not, BFF not and I got this. This doesn't look right.
You might want to limit that to my screen because
that's definitely doesn't look anything like you. I think you're right. I think the human brain is designed, and some people more than others, is designed to kind of. There you go. Looks just like
a pattern
you.
Matching machine.
Wait a minute, no, that's the ad. See,
that's what.
Is that real?
See that. That's the ad.
Wow.
That's the ad.
See, that's well. I'll also if you cover up the eyes with these big sunglasses.
Okay, the eyes give it away. He doesn't look anything like him.
Also, I mean, I would have been very very pleased to be a member of Possum Lodge, but given that, but I am not, and so therefore I don't have the fishing vest.
All right, we're going to take a break. We have the question engine up. In fact, we have the author of the question engine in studio. That's
yes,
pretty cool. You want to give him some props?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know his name?
Andy Abgotson.
You didn't want to have to say the last name.
Abgotspun.
Abgotspun.
I always say it badly.
Is that Swiss? Yes. But he lives in the UK currently.
Yes, Andy is the mastermind behind the question system. So the two of us sit there and chat away on it all day, and then he creates the magic. And so he is visiting so that we have more time to informally chat about it. But
that's really
he is,
cool. Are you just doing that out of the goodness of your own heart, or is they paying you to do this? They're not paying you well, apparently.
It's a little compensated.
A little stuff is.
Yeah. So
he told me he uses Node.js and JavaScript to do this, which is pretty impressive. So if you want to take a look at the question engine, go to twit.to/mbw407. That's our show today. And the way it works, you can ask a question.
And you don't need to go to you can go to an iPad view now. You don't
I'm gonna log in first real quickly, but you can
we added social logins.
It's gotten very fancy.
It's getting there.
Man, it doesn't recognize
it's a new website, so it won't recognize your last password.
Does it not recognize the old login?
What is the old website? What's the old website? Heroku or
just retype it in. It just won't recognize.
I don't know it. I have to go to last retype it. Just retype it in, it'll work. just fine. I don't know what it was.
If I send you like $50 towards the development of this app, will I be like a millionaire in 5 years?
Yes.
That's our hope. That's our hope, Andy. That's what we're... Give
me the address. I got $50 for you.
So you're taking advantage. This could be the nuance of the 2020 decade. I'm going to copy the password.
I bet in a couple of years you can convince some dummy to give you $100 million for that and then walk away. I have faith in the investment system.
There's stupid money floating around everywhere, apparently. Good. All right. I've logged in. And yes, save site. Thank you, LastPass. Do save that site, I think, from now on. We will save that. To get back to what we were talking about, God, you've changed the whole UI. I can't figure out the thing at all.
You don't need to. So now, if you want to answer stuff, you just hit answer. Like, you don't have to go.
I don't have to
UI.
Go to the dashboard.
You can
anymore.
If you want to go to an iPad view. You hit that right here.
So here's the deal: you can ask questions there. If you just go now, the login stops some people, but you could do anything.
I can use social login now. But you can do anything.
You can use a trash login if you wish. Right?
Yeah.
You just have to remember it
currently, but we'll tighten that up. You know, most of the login stuff is mostly to...
A lot of our people don't want to
manage.
Give up their email.
You can set up any kind of login, but it's going to be... But you can also use social login, so you don't have to log in with anything with us. So
does that make you all feel better? Well, anyway,
it's
that's
there to minimize spam and that type of thing.
That's the way it is, unfortunately. We don't have an on-login at this point. But do create a login, and if you don't want to, that's fine. Just ask your question there, or more, just as important, vote up or down questions if you choose to. I see there's an iPad view, which is very nice and clean and easy. So we'll go through a few of those questions when we come back, answering your questions on the question engine. Again, Twit2, that's our new shortening engine that Patrick Delahanty created for us, twit.to/MBW407. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom.com. Not a law firm. Let me be very clear about that. It's better than a law firm. It's self-help. At your direction, they will help you do the legal stuff you need to do. An LLC, for instance, to start your business, or an incorporation. LLC from $99 plus the filing fees. The incorporation, $99 plus the state filing fees, S-Corp or C-Corp. Actually, if you're starting a business, you should also do your trademark. $199. We've trademarked Twit and our logo. This was back when I didn't have a lawyer. It was just me. There was no one else, but I decided to set this up. And, you know, we're still using all of the legal work that I did then in 2005. Because most of the stuff you can do yourself, last will and testament from $69. They have all kinds of personal and business-oriented legal services. And I know sometimes you go, well, I'll give you an example. When I started the LLC, I said, should it be an LLC? Should it be a Chapter S? Should it be a C Corp? I'm not sure. And what's nice is you can now ask an attorney at LegalZoom.com. They have pre-negotiated flat rate pricing for a low monthly fee to talk to an attorney licensed in your state. You can read the attorney's profile and unedited customer reviews to get an idea if that person is right for you. And it's just great. So very affordable legal help from LegalZoom.com. They've helped over a million businesses like Twit get started right. A+ from the Better Business Bureau. Celebrate innovation. Start your business today. LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code MBW. You'll save on your legal needs and also get access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom provides legal help through independent attorneys and self-help services, but they're not a law firm. LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code MBW to get $10 off at checkout. And we thank them so much for their support of Mac Break Weekly. So there's many. Actually, you know, for a slow news week, there's a lot of big stories. I think maybe the big story is Apple has reached a settlement on the e-books lawsuit. They're going to pay. It was a class action lawsuit. The terms are currently under seal, have to be approved by court, but it seems that everybody agrees. Judge Denise Cote, in a letter.
I think this was extremely well played by Amazon.
Yeah.
I mean, this is it. Yeah. Like, this is how we... Because the thing is that the true monopoly, the true...
Explain,
you know, man,
this.
So the
before there was Apple, before there was iBooks, there was Amazon.
Before there was iBooks.
And we're talking about e-books specifically, right?
And we're talking about basically 50% of all books bought, right, are bought through Amazon. And so the Amazon has been increasing their, you know, and so when they started putting out the ebooks, they just said, this is how much you will charge for them.
There are two different ways to do this. There's the Amazon way, which is, you know, this came from the days when Amazon bought books from a middleman, from Ingram and other distributors. They paid a certain price for the book, and then they, as any bookstore does, would set a price in the bookstore.
Right.
Wholesale retail model.
Yeah. The Apple decided to do something different. They set up
an agency model
where they said, you price the book, Mr. Publisher. We just take 30%, like Apple's done in the App Store iTunes Store.
No, but actually with iTunes, though, Apple had gone the other way for a long time, saying 99 cents.
Price. That's right.
It was 99 cents. It was $1.99. It was whatever those things were. It was always going to be the same. So because they didn't have leverage, they went the other direction, which to me, I still feel like what Apple did was go around and sell. And I really don't feel like it was collusion as much as it was selling a good idea. Like, this is a much better deal for you to work with us.
I think it mostly came organically from two different directions. From the old direction, the old bookstore model, and one from the modern iTunes/App Store model. However, Apple did put there were a couple of things that got Apple in trouble. They put in a clause that said, and by the way, you'll set the price, but it may not be offered at a lower price anywhere else, including Amazon. That was illegal, one. And then they emailed around about it. And Steve Jobs, even in the biography, said...
That was probably not a good idea.
Publicly, this was all about Amazon. That was a mistake.
Right.
And in fact, Judge Cote last year ruled that Apple had colluded with the publishers to drive up ebook prices, undermining Amazon's pricing model.
Monopoly. Amazon's pricing model now has been... they don't have that control, but not everything's the same price now. That said, Amazon is showing what happens when you have 50%. They're showing a really good lesson of what happens when a company has too much of a market, where they are just telling book publishers, we're not going to supply your book if you don't meet our demands.
So the Justice Department was one of the sewers, but so were many states' attorney general.
Mm-hmm.
The Justice Department said, as long as you put in a monitor, you know, that's fine. We don't want monetary damages, but you've got to put a monitor to make sure Apple doesn't. And remember, this is the monitor that Apple hates with a passion, with a fury that burns like the fire.
The unqualified monitor who is Judge Cote's friend.
Meanwhile, the state's attorneys general continued the lawsuit, and the judge, same judge, Denise Cote, says now that Apple and the plaintiffs have reached an agreement in principle. The terms are under seal. They will have to be approved by Judge Cote. The plaintiffs, this is a class action at this point, have been seeking $480 million from Apple, claiming Apple had overcharged. Apple has continued to argue, we don't violate antitrust laws. B, we don't want a court-appointed monitor. C, we didn't do anything wrong. This is good for consumers. The Justice Department's been satisfied that Apple won't, with this monitor, that Apple's not going to do it again. Apple may have now settled. You know, that's nothing. Jump $280 change. Million? Dollars? That's nothing.
It's one-eighth of a beat.
Yeah.
One-ninth.
it's possible that Apple settled for the full amount. Probable they settled for something less, but
it's like less, glad to it's get a couple this. Days of earnings.
Yeah, glad to get this stuff.
It's just like, literally, it's a couple days. Yeah, a couple
it
days.
It pulls off the Band-Aid is what it does.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. But I am hearing from, at least from Renee, and I think a little bit from Alex, from you too, I guess, that you feel this is an unfair lawsuit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's two different business models, and I think that, I think that letting them run with those business models is good in the long run for everybody.
The publishers, by the way, settled immediately because they had called and emailed each other. And, there was plenty of evidence that they didn't like that $9.99 price point that Amazon was enforcing.
My thing isn't that it's not that I think that it was unfair. I think that the remedy, I think that Cote's court ended up being a bit of a kangaroo court. I think the most favored nation clause was definitely not right. They should have gotten rid of that. If Apple wants to compete on experience, they should compete on experience. Maybe it costs a buck or two more than Amazon, but they can provide me with things like in-app purchases and stuff that maybe Amazon can't. So I'm fine with that. But the monitor, especially the person they chose as a monitor and the antics that it sounds like they got up to.
Yeah, I agree on that. Yeah.
It made the entire court seem silly. I think they really should have thrown that one away and started fresh.
This is what the Department of Justice wanted. Would it have been sufficient just to take out that line that said, and you can't charge less anywhere else?
I think so.
That's not what the publishers wanted, by the way. The publishers wanted to cut off Amazon at the knees and wanted to use Apple to do it.
Right. And what Apple didn't want is eventually after they try to cut off Amazon at the knees, how do they cut off? You know, I think that the fear is, again, but you're kind of caught when you're dealing with Apple and Amazon, you're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. Because
What is best for us as consumers?
It's a hard argument because there are dumping laws. Like, dumping can be a problem because it results in destroying the market. So
we're seeing that in a way because Amazon has put every bookstore out of business. And now if the only place you can get a book were to be Amazon, then they could raise prices up above that $10 price point.
Yeah, and the bigger problem, though, is that they take the value out of the market. So I used to write books. I used to publish books. I used to be involved in that industry. And it comes to a certain point where you don't feel like there's enough value to do that. So you go and do something else. And then as a consumer, I no longer have access to something that I like. I mean, like, very few people make wooden toys anymore. There's just no market for it. And sometimes as a consumer,
I blame Amazon for that too.
But you have to realize that a fair price is a fair price. It may not be the cheapest price, but it's a price that sustains the market and gives you more of what you love.
Yeah. The point at which Apple's arguments usually start to make me waver is when they try to enforce rules like, yeah, but you're never, ever, ever going to make an Apple consumer pay more for your product than they pay anywhere else. So it doesn't even matter what we forget is that when Amazon decided to make every single book $9.99, it wasn't necessarily because they wanted to destabilize the publishing and snap up the entire market. It's because they felt they were the first people to go really all in on book publishing. They could have lost their shirts if they didn't do it right. And this was they felt the way to make sure that we're going to start convincing people that here's a hardcover book that costs $27 and you're buying a physical object you can keep and give away. We are only selling you the notional idea of electrons in the shape of a book. We feel as though people aren't gonna go for that unless there's an economic incentive. So a couple of years so they can build that market, that's their prerogative and that's their risk. So when Apple does stuff like that, when they say that, sure, fine, you can do in-app purchasing, but you know what, if you do a subscription, you're going to have to make sure that even if you sell it online on your own terms, you have to offer it the same price and take the same cut out of it. Well, that's the problem. That's the point at which we start to get some
problems. And I think that the real opportunity that Apple has lost, and I don't know if it's regainable at this point, but it could be, is that when they came out with iBooks, you know, we've talked about this in the past, or I've talked about it in the past, is that they really lost the opportunity to distinguish their books from Amazon's in a way that, you know, that the ebook is just this, you know, it's an ebook is the same to movies, you know, or an ebook is to an iBook, or what an iBook could be, is to what stage is to movies, which is that, you know, when we started doing movies, we just took pictures of people on the stage. We took video of people on the stage, and that was just kind of like still cameras watching people on a stage. Then we realized we could start doing a lot more than that. And the thing is the future of books is not going to be a bunch of text. The future of books is going to be something that's much more interactive, and it's going to be a mixture of video and audio and all these other things, and iBooks are the beginning of that. And Apple has so poorly invested in that platform and partnered with people and not waited for them to do it, waiting for book publishers to create the next generation. There's been a handful of those, but really waiting for them to do that on their own is, you know, they're in the box. They're not going to see anything outside that box. There's another box there that doesn't look like a book. And ebooks are just a kind of a crappy facsimile of you know, that you can search now and you can carry a bunch of them on your phone. But those are the only real advantages of ebooks over the paper version.
But don't you think that that's the exact same problem that's faced, the difference between traditional paper-style publishing and software development? Because every single year, there are going to be more opportunities with more APIs. Every time you start off with an idea and you think about, given all of these tools we have for building software, what's the best way to interactively articulate this idea? Whereas book publishing is, it's simple, it's streamlined. We can bring in 100 people onto this project and they know what to do on every step of the way, because it always starts with manuscript, media that gets attached to that manuscript, proofreading, editing, binding, and shipping. And even if you do it electronically, that's still a very linear and manageable process. But I think the reason why we haven't seen those sort of evolutions is that it's difficult when you start off with someone who knows how to write a book about Mac OS or has an idea for a novel or a children's story, and now you're expecting this person to know how to be a typographer, to know how to communicate visually. Not only that, but know how to be a director of animation, because if it's really going to be exploited as an iBook, you have to figure out, well, why should we describe through text how Winnie the Pooh makes his way from this scene to this scene? Shouldn't we find a way to actually show that happening? And if we're going to show that happening, why don't we give the reader a level of control over what happens? Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he doesn't want Pooh to go to that to go to that new location or this new scene. I think that the limitation isn't so much a failure of Apple so much as, God, it's just so exhausting. Why can't I just simply start with Once Upon a Time, end with the end, email my manuscript
that's good in the short term. But I do think that the future, when you look at where animation tools have come and a lot of these other pieces, and I'm not talking about recreating the storyline, but I'm talking about adding all these little elements, the book elements or whatever, the first app that came out that had... was a big step in that direction of what you could do, but they did it with hard code. And the issue is that the iBooks platform has all the tools to do it. It's just that they didn't develop iBooks, and they also didn't seed the market. And it's something Apple doesn't do. I mean, Apple tends not to seed the market. But if they took the $840 million that they spent here and they seeded the market with $840 million or $1 billion a quarter, where they just make great books that explain and show people how they got done and how they got put together, and really looked at, like, we're going to actually build a market that makes all the ebooks that Amazon is selling look absurdly, you know, old. You know, Apple would do a lot better than just trying to compete head to head with, because their platform isn't Amazon.
I think they started the original iBooks came out, they were much better than what Amazon, and it forced Amazon to get the newer Kindle format. And then they made iBooks Author, and that was sort of enough to encourage Mike Mattis to sell Pushpop Press to Facebook, which hasn't really done anything with it. But then they sort of stopped. They made iBooks Author for the iPad. It never went to the iPhone.
And they were, the rumor is they were horribly disappointed with what the textbook guys came out with. So what was produced, what was actually produced by the book publishers, in Apple's estimation, at least what I've heard through the grapevine, not directly, was, you know, they were pretty upset about. You know, they just felt like they got screwed.
And I think that's true, but I think when you look at something like what Vicky Murley has done with the CSS animation and Transform books, and then you look at other companies like Chris Harris and Glide, he did the Loop magazine app, and he's building a platform to make this easy, and Mark Kawano's Storehouse, where he's like, you don't have to be a typesetter, you don't have to be a layout person, you don't need InDesign, we'll take all the burden of design away from you, and you just do... picture-based storytelling. And I think that's where we're going to see the next generation of stuff, is these indie apps who, again, fill up the slack until the Apples and Amazon realizes there's real opportunity there.
Yep. The good news is, in a digital world, it's very fluid. And, you know, I don't think Amazon could ever achieve a monopoly, really. They've had an advantage with Kindle. They put Sony out of the ebook business.
Well, I think Amazon may... I mean, I think that Amazon may put out the publishing business out of business.
Books are another matter entirely, but this is ebooks we're talking
about. But, like, the methodology that we're talking about, that where it's...
a big fan of the Apple iBooks, you know, tool.
I think I was a fan of where it could go. You know,
and once it never went anywhere. Well, and you said this is the problem, is that you can create these tools, but you can't force them to use them.
But a lot of people can, you know, a lot of times what a lot of companies do, we work with a lot of those companies, is they put something out and then they spend literally millions of dollars working with people to build the first ones and to prove it and to show people how it's done. And I just don't think Apple spent, you know, they just felt like if they just throw it out there, it'll work there. But what they needed to do was do heavy training, and they needed to do, you know, big talks, and they needed to build examples, and they needed to do, you know.
Is the ebook author proprietary? iBook author proprietary? Can it create an iBook for other platforms?
It's EPUB, but with its own little secret sauce in it that makes it difficult to transcode it from one place to another.
That's one reason why you wouldn't want to use it.
I guess that the issue is that it is the problem is that there's a chicken or egg kind of thing. Like, what you need to do is start creating those titles, and, you know, iBook, it just wasn't quite enough to do what we wanted it to do.
Why isn't there a independent group creating a non-proprietary multimedia format for ebooks?
It's hardly. I mean, the reason that iBooks was really good is it was based on WebKit, and WebKit was good because they went out and they did things like port core animation to make a lot of the frameworks, like the HTML animation, because the standards body was just taking forever. And they said, well, we'll do it first and then you guys can catch up. And no one bothered to catch up. Like, you could do standards-based implementation and stuff. It just, there doesn't seem to be enough money or interest or willpower to do it.
And Andy, you said there is such a thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's a standards board for EPUB. If you look at the specs for EPUB 3, you see that it really does have the ability to encapsulate all kinds of media, multiple kinds of interactive media, very few limitations in terms of what you can't do if you're not unless you're not willing to invest in the coding to make it happen. The question is, though, that the meat of EPUB was always supposed to be that you can burn it once and make it universally available.
Right.
So it's hard to develop a it gets back to developing a book as a piece of software as opposed to a series of pages, digital or not. Right. So you have to answer the question, what do you do for the person who has the spiffy $500 9.7-inch iPad that has all the codecs built into it, that has the support for all kinds of WebKit controls and HTML5 operators? But what do you do to the kid who has the $59 Paperwhite, e-ink Kindle? And what do you do to the people who have apps that are even less capable than that? The idea isn't to have to burn five different copies of this and make sure that someone has the right copy of it. So... It might be as simple as the old statement that, you know, it's a great idea, but a lot of people are going to have to die first, meaning that a whole generation of people who grew up doing nothing but start at page one, read through page 300, at some point stop and look at pieces of media. Those people have to age out of the system and a new generation that never really got into reading so much as assimilating an experience and information through Google and through games and through interactivity, that they might simply think that they might be the people who are able to visualize a story in the terms of it has to be interactive, there has to be multiple paths. It doesn't necessarily have to be linear.
And I think narrative as a whole is another thing. And I think that we can decide whether that's, but you know, narrative from a pure narrative are the biggest sellers, I think, if I'm correct. But
if you're sitting out on the beach, you really want to lie down and read a book from beginning to end.
If you walk into – if you used to walk into Borders Bookstore, the fictional area is, you know, one-tenth of the square – you know, square was one-tenth of the square footage of a bookstore. You know,
So nonfiction has been somewhat replaced by the web. In fact, a lot of this – the answer is the web.
There was a great talk by Serenity – Caldwell from Macworld about how at Singleton 2 years ago, I think I'll put the link in the chat room, but she explained how hard it was for her to make one book from Macworld available on just two or three different platforms. Right. And it was arduous. I mean, it's not arduous if it's text.
It's not arduous at all. You use Calibre or something like that and you pump out all the formats. It's only arduous if you have multimedia.
She added images.
And Serenity is a master at building ebooks.
Right.
If you tweet out a question to her, she'll fix things for you.
Yeah.
But that's the third major issue that we in movies, everyone's talking about how it's impossible for a middle budget movie to be made nowadays. It either has to be made for so little money that there's no way to not make a profit, or it has to cost $200-300 million and bet on becoming an international blockbuster. I think one of the reasons why we see such a lush environment for books is that it doesn't cost that much money to produce a book. It's not that risky an investment to buy a manuscript, prep it for publication, and put it out there. I think one of the difficulties we're facing is that once we start looking at it as a software project, now we start to say, well, this is going to cost us a minimum of $700,000 just to make this and to support it and to make sure that people can actually access it and read it. At that point, we can't really go for the Wes Anderson style, like quirky stories or the topics that we don't think there's going to be the nonfiction books for which there is not a wide audience. So it's a problem with lots and lots of layers. I don't think it's necessarily Apple's problem to fix. I think it's going to be situations which people like publishers of magazines like The Loop or like The Magazine that are unsatisfied with the product that they're putting out right now, them themselves bankrolling the solutions for their own business, much like the way that Elon Musk has bankrolled the idea of, well, let's do our own electric car company, let's do our own spacecraft company, and we might succeed, we might fail, but there's ways to do this as individuals that you can't do as a large like global industry.
You know, it's fascinating. It's really all because we're transforming or transitioning from the old way of doing things, printing words on paper. It's turbulence. And this happens in every sector. But it seems like there's a fairly good roadmap for how this can occur. There will always be this linear, page-driven, text-heavy format because we do like that. I think so. I think we like that. And I think there will also, and that is not software. That's a very static format. And then there's software, and it could be as simple as what Serenity was doing, which is just adding images to something much more complex and interactive. But that becomes software. And I think what's happening is we have publishers, plenty of them, for plain text. We don't yet have a model for how this more elaborate software-based. And I think you nailed it, Andy, when you said, when you pointed out Medium and the others, who are basically publishers providing a software platform for people who want to do something more sophisticated than just plain text.
I don't think that it's Apple's problem to solve, but I do think it's Apple's opportunity to solve it.
I think it isn't because Apple's so proprietary. And I think that's bad.
We can say it's good or bad for the consumer, but I can say it from an Apple, from pure Apple perspective.
Well, it's good for Apple's business, but it's terrible for the consumer. If you had to go to a bookstore and they said, well, you can read this book, but only if you're white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, that's not good.
But if Apple created a, you know, Apple created another revolution of how we make books and how we you know, send, you know, share information and so on and so forth. It wouldn't stay proprietary to Apple. What would happen is other people would, you know, do something else. It wouldn't be iBooks. It would be another interactive medium. But we'd start building interactive books. And when we talk about Apple having so much money that they have to start giving it back to investors, which I view as like pouring down the drain. Spending $2 billion a year on pushing both, you know, various versions of e-learning, you know, iBooks and so on and so forth would be a good investment for Apple, given that the entire education system is probably going to crumble in the next decade. You know, and everyone's positioning.
I think you're just completely wrong-headed on this, frankly.
Because it would just get other people excited about it.
Apple is not the answer to this.
I'm just saying that I think that Apple is providing a solution like that, but the solution isn't iBooks Author. The solution is Xcode.
Okay.
Sure.
I'm looking at Serenity. By the way, Serenity's speech, thank you, Renee, for the link, is on Vimeo. You can search for it. But I'm looking at some of her slides from her speech. She has several different workflows she proposed. This is an example of the complexity. She's just doing three formats, PDF, EPUB, and Mobi, which are probably three that you would want to do. And the complexity of what she's attempting, it becomes clear when she starts in Pages. For PDF, she goes to eDesign. For EPUB, she goes to from Pages to EPUB to Sigil to BB Edit to Caliber.
This is 2 years ago, but I don't know anyone's done her any favors in simplifying it yet.
Yeah, it's you know, and these are her criteria for doing it. This is a she says, I don't want to use more than four apps to generate my book. But I think this is a do-it-yourself thing, and I think the solution is probably that somebody provides this as a service. I don't know. It just feels like this is going to be complicated. But I do think that any proprietary solution or solution that attempts to own it as iBooks and Amazon both seem to be wanting to do is not going to be the end run.
I'd like a proprietary interface and then an open format. That always ends up being a good result. Someone can make a wonderful way to make it, but the format that it spits out should be standard.
That's perfect. So enough of the eBooks. We're boring everybody. Let's talk about the Tim Cook profile in the New York Times and then the Jonathan Ive profile in the New York Times. The Times is getting some interesting. When I mentioned this profile, Renee, you said that the Tim Cook profile was mostly a piece of fiction.
No, I mean, what's the best way to say it? I think the Jonathan Ive quote is great. You know, the Robert Iger quote, those are all good. I think the premise of the article, I don't know what went into it. I did complain about it both in Twitter and privately, but you read the article and the crux of the article is Tim Cook is not Steve Jobs, which is fine.
Well, tell us something we don't know.
That's the entire article summed up. But at the very end, there's a couple developers saying, I can't believe Tim Cook announced HealthKit without any new hardware. Steve Jobs would never do that. When, in fact, you know, WWDC 2011, no new hardware. Passbook, no new hardware. HomeKit, no new hardware. He did it all the time. And I think when you get something that substantial wrong in an article, when you disprove your own thesis that botchedly, and I know it's a word, but I'm creating it for this.
Botchedly is a good word.
Yeah, I think the entire thing becomes actually less valuable than if you hadn't.
The Johnny Ive quote was, it's hard for all of us to be patient. It was hard for Steve. It is hard for Tim. Is that the quote you're talking about?
There's one right above that, the paragraph right above that, too, where he says that he doesn't think the design philosophy has changed very much at Apple. It's just matured, so to speak.
Yeah, because he leads it.
Well, and Tim Cook, people say that, you know, Tim Cook is no Steve Jobs, but Steve Jobs was no Tim Cook. He was smart enough to hire Tim Cook, and Tim Cook, likewise, is smart enough to hire people who complement his skills.
Yeah. Did we learn anything about Tim? I mean, there were facts in here that I didn't know about Tim Cook. I don't know how germane they are. Yeah, the cross burning was interesting. But, you know, one of the things that went, I think happened to Steve Jobs and Apple was the beatification of Steve Jobs and the cult of personality that surrounded him. It seems like Tim Cook is actively trying to avoid that. That is both a benefit. It's certainly an ego boost, but it's also a detriment because it makes it harder for you to be a human.
Well, I think that's one of the differences in management, or excuse me, in leadership style, as evidenced through the public statements. I mean, WWDC, everybody was talking about Craig Federighi. Almost nobody was talking about Tim Cook because he basically was there to he was essentially the MC, not the main presenter. And he was never hesitant to hand things off to other people and basically said, I'm here to represent the Apple logo, but I'm going to hand off for every technology and every product that we're talking about during this keynote. I'm going to let the manager who's responsible for that product and that product space do the entire thing, which is certainly not unheard of for during the Steve Jobs era. But you don't every moment that Steve Jobs spent off the stage was notable for whatever reason. You feel as though he's going back to get some water and to, you know, close a deal. That's why he decided to be off the stage for 15 minutes.
Mr. Cook is amassing a creative brain trust, according to Bono, the lead singer of the band U2. Cult of personality, who befriended Mr. Jobs and worked closely with him and Apple's team on developing that black and red U2 branded iPod.
It should be black and red.
I doubt he did more than that. And it should have all our songs on it for a great price. Mr. Cook is not saying, quote, "I'm here to replace him," said Bono. He's saying, and this is the quote, "I'll try to replace him with Steve Jobs with five people. It explains the acquisition of Beats," says Bono. Okay.
I keep trying to figure out why we're still having these. I'm sorry, not us on this panel.
No, but in general, the world cannot let this rest. Yes,
it's a big purchase, and no one understands it.
Not just Beats, but just Steve Jobs.
Not Beats. That again. Well, gosh, he's had this job now for 6 years now, and it really is like, I don't know. It's at some point after the Red Sox replaced their manager, you got to talk about the Red Sox as though they are an ongoing concern and not, you know, limping along because they lost Don Zimmer 30 years ago.
That's the consequence, by the way, the late Popeye, we're sorry to lose you. That's the consequence of beatification, right? If you have a saint leading a company, then it's very hard for a mortal man to take over.
Right.
Unless he's a pope.
Yeah. it almost becomes a situation where when I see that phrase, I can't believe that this is not something Steve Jobs would have done. It's not that I disregard whatever someone says before or after that, but I suddenly start to look through this through the prism of someone who has a nostalgic view of Apple as opposed to seeing it as a modern and dynamic company that changes from quarter to quarter and year to year.
Well, there's a lot of things. The observation is that it is not the same Apple. If you leave out the names, not,
but the same thing would be if Steve Jobs had beaten the cancer and had been into remission, the Apple of 2014 would still be a different Apple from what it was in 2009. So, it's a discussion that is it's nice to have a few beers and retire after a movie and talk about this, but I get a little bit frustrated that I don't know when people are going to be willing to completely move on and treat Apple as though, again, they're not what they were in 2009. They are what they are in 2014. Change is integral to the concept of life.
I agree.
Does not change, life dies.
But what we're trying to figure out is, who is this Tim Cook? What is the Tim Cook Apple going to be?
The thing that now that's really impresses me is that people, and we talked about this 2 years ago, but the general mainstream media, I think, didn't understand how valuable Tim Cook was to Apple until more recently. And I don't know if they understand it still, but I think a lot of these articles, you know, Matt Drance had a great article, Jason Snell did, John Gruber, all had great articles on this, that, you know, people keep talking about Apple without Steve Jobs, but if you start trying to do the math on Apple without Tim Cook, that is not a good thing. Tim Cook has contributed incredibly to the success of Apple in the modern age in innumerable ways.
I think Tim Cook's somewhat of a cipher, and a lot of this ink is not really about Steve Jobs anymore, but who is Tim Cook, and what does a Tim Cook-led Apple look like? And with all due respect, we've yet to see that. Apple has not released any new – they keep saying new categories, new products. We learned a little bit at WWDC about some new software that might come out this fall. But I think we still don't really know what the Tim Cook Apple is going to do. Because we have the iPhone 5S. That was Steve's last product, probably.
Well, but John Gruber had a great piece on this called Only Apple, where he sort of lynched it to Tim Cook saying only Apple could do this. And he went through the thought exercise of could only Apple do this. And what he came to is, back in 2007, they had to stop working on OS X in order to get the iPhone out the gate. This year, Tim Cook's Apple came out with Yosemite, with iOS 8, with Swift, with all the new developer tools all at once. And it goes back to, when Scott Forstall left, and I drew this analogy that, when Steve Jobs came back to Apple, he put the products in a category, consumer, professional, laptop, desktop. That's exactly what Tim Cook did with Apple internally. He turned Apple's corporation into an Apple product, and we're now seeing the result of that. And I think it's incredibly impressive as a product. I'd say it's probably better than a watch at this point because it can create things like a watch in the future.
And it also feels like setting Tim Cook up for failure, because it's everything that he does is going in the future is, of course, going to build upon iPhone, iPad, iOS, and macOS. And those things were things that were created under various Steve Jobs tenures. And so anything that fails, anything that succeeds will be seen as, well, yeah, he had iOS. He had this multi-touch technology. He had this amazingly successful product. The fact that he articulated it into the form of a watch or moved into TV, big deal. That's something he inherited from the previous administration. If he does something that fails, then that is not something that he inherited from Steve Jobs or from previous.
By the way, we're all assuming there's a watch. Nobody has said there's a watch. There's no watch. That's made up.
It's made up.
Because there's not going to be a
beat. Unicorn. There may not be a watch.
Wait a minute. We just had this conversation. I thought about.
Acting as if it's a real deal. It's not.
Beats. Beats.
No, I was using that as an example of something that is unique to something that we weren't talking about 6 years ago, but we're talking about right now. I'm saying that if it's an iOS device,
I understand we're talking about it, but I'm again pointing out that Apple has yet to do anything. To illustrate what the Tim Cook era is going to deliver, except for WWDC. It's the first time we've seen any kind of roadmap.
Although, are you looking for like when a new director takes over the Star Wars franchise, and now there's a
wait
clear
for the movie.
Delineation between there were six Star Wars movies that were made before this guy came along, and now there's going to be another one that come afterward, and now whatever happens between the end of the previous movie and this new movie is what this director changed.
We know that there's going to be a new movie. Apple has not announced any new products.
The thing to remember too is that they don't do that.
Well, I understand they do that. I'm just saying we don't know.
That would have been revolutionary. Then I think that I'd be totally on the bandwagon of, oh my God, this is a sea change in the character of Apple that they're willing to show off at WWDC, saying here's what we're planning. They did if they were to do a Google Glass style, we think this is a really great idea. We don't know the best way to do it, but here's what we're playing with right now, and then show off this is alpha hardware. This is something we've just built for ourselves to show you what our thinking is. And in many ways,
I'm not asking them to do that. I'm just pointing. I'm not saying they should or shouldn't do that. I'm pointing out that everything we say about what Apple is all projection of our own hopes, dreams, fears, and fantasies at this point.
But it's important to remember, that Tim Cook was responsible for a lot of the products that we attribute to Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs didn't, handcraft them all by himself. The famous line is that, how did Apple make an iPad? And that's Steve Jobs, but how did they make it for $500? Well, that's Tim Cook. He was integral to almost all the major modern products they've launched. Right. He hasn't gone anywhere. He's still there.
So people act like I want him to release something, or I'm just pointing out that we are projecting. Are we not?
No, I want him to release.
That's my. That's absolutely my point.
Yeah,
that it seems unfair to be saying that. Well, we're gonna judge Tim Cook because we haven't seen what he's done. We haven't seen things that we feel is indicative of a new Apple. But what we're saying is what we're really saying is that here's the thing that Apple would have to do for me to recognize that as major change. When in truth, it could be something as simple as macOS and iOS working together as though they were made by the same company. That could be just as revolutionary as the iPad, as the iPhone. It really is the booster rocket that I think is taking has the potential to take Apple into a higher orbit. But if the fact that it's not something that I would have predicted a year ago as the as an exciting new direction for Apple, that doesn't negate the value of that that development.
I guess the problem is we have to do a show every week. Frankly,
we can do it about software, Leo.
We did. We've talked a lot about iOS 8 and Yosemite.
They got updated today.
Really?
Yeah, beta 2 for both of them came out today.
Tell me about the changes. What's new?
I have only just installed it. I've only had time to play with it. But according to the interwebs, things are working better, and they've added additional functionality. I'm gonna have to dig into it when we're done here.
Okay.
Do we know what's we had one of the questions from the question engine was what's new in OS 10 Yosemite Beta 2?
I'll tell you what. Let's stop and when we come back, we'll start answering questions from the question engine in just a moment. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com. When it's time to make a website, it's kind of the Apple of web hosting. It's beautiful. It's elegant. It's clean. It's simple.
Scalable.
It scales beautifully. We've never brought a Squarespace site down. So we're talking hosting plus software, beautifully combined. And this, you know, this is an example. Who was it said, if you really want to make great software, you got to make the hardware too. If you really wanted to do great web hosting, great websites, you got to do the hosting and the software together.
I remember those days.
They belong together. And Squarespace has done it. Incredibly easy to use. You can take advantage of the latest web technologies like mobile responsive design, HTML5, CSS3, without knowing what any of that means. That's the beauty of it. E-commerce too. And if you want to try it without any cost or obligation, just go to squarespace.com, click the Get Started button, pick from their 25 beautiful templates. The logo creator tool lets you create a basic logo for your small business or individual. They've got great help and how-to stuff. They've revamped their support page. Support, by the way, comes from Squarespace itself and their offices in New York City 24/7, 7 days a week. Lots of self-help articles, video workshops, webinars, too. They've really focused on making it easy to do what you want to do, whether you're a doctor, a lawyer, or an Indian chief, whether you want to do a portfolio for your photography business, a personal blog, or sell your stuff. They've got beautifully designed e-commerce, as you would expect. And every template is e-commerce ready. Best of all this starts at $8 a month. It includes a free domain name when you sign up for a year. Metric app for iPhone and iPad, gorgeous. The blog app, gorgeous. I cannot praise this enough. It's just wonderful. Start a free 2-week trial right now. Squarespace.com, click the Get Started button. If you decide to sign up, use the offer code MacBreak and we'll get you 10% off. 10% off at squarespace.com when you use the offer code MacBreak. But try it free right now. That's making me hungry. The Park Slope Tavern. That looked good. All right, time for the question engine. Why don't you, do you want to MC this or shall I?
Either way. Are you ready?
I should have given out the URL again. twit.to/. It's going to be the same from now on because we control this. So it'll be MBW and the show number, in this case 407. twit.to/. MBW407.
You like the new design?
I really like the new design.
It's getting pretty. See, and you can see questions
question
that have been answered.
Why is Leo so grumpy today? I'm not grumpy.
No, I already answered that one.
I ain't grumpy. I am. Look, somebody's got to. See,
he's
the problem
the
is there are some people who watch this show who think we should just be cheerleaders and that everything Apple does is wonderful and gorgeous, and that's not this show. That's some other show you're thinking of. We just want to talk honestly about what we think is going on in the world. And yes, I represent the user, not Apple. Will Apple is this in order when I look
That's
at this?
That's in order, yep.
So the number one question comes from Steve Kellner in Southern California. What's the number there? How many upvotes?
21.
Wow. Will Apple revamp iTunes in the fall? The UI, so dated. Why are you so grumpy, Steve? It's true. iTunes has been just left. I feel like they're ignoring it. It was really a collection of Apple scripts for so long. They're just ignoring it because somewhere somebody is writing a beautiful Swift-based, elegant,
that's our dream,
fast version of iTunes. Yes,
I think it's our dream. I think one of the problems is that it is also does a lot of things. So I think it's complicated, you know, to fix it and still achieve all the things that they're trying to do. So I think that's probably why it's taking so long.
Yeah, I mean, it's biggest problem is that
Go ahead, Renee.
I was going to say his biggest problem is that it has to be transportable to Windows. So they put everything that they ever have to use for any iPod or iPhone or iPad user on Windows, bundle it in that app, and then make it easy to cross-develop for. And that is a horrible noose around iTunes' neck.
Yeah. That's why I wonder if the next real revolution for iTunes is for them to unbundle the hardware support features, make the best app they possibly can to support your iPhone and your iPad on your Mac and on your Windows device, and then make the music management and the playlist management and the jukebox features a totally separate app so that they can really leverage the advantages that they have in Mac OS. It really is clumsy. I'm one of the reasons why I do so much of my music management now directly on the device is because it's no longer any fun whatsoever to manipulate playlists and tailor my music on iTunes itself. So that's the real tragedy here.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, from Macworld UK, iTunes 12.
Separate. Well, they're going to have to redesign it, right? I mean, that's at least something they're going to have to do.
Is this leak accurate, or is this from Yosemite? The iTunes 12 preview.
They have a new icon that we haven't seen yet on Yosemite, the red one. But you just have to think that Yosemite is such a big redesign, they're going to have to give a coat of paint at the very least to iTunes, or it won't match.
Also, considering that now it really... If
they say Apple is working on a big overhaul.
Yeah, I mean, on top of everything else, now that everything is in Yosemite is widgetized, you feel as though you have to reconsider... If iTunes' role is simply to provide a deck of playback controls into the notification bar or into other apps, or if you really do have to make this as much of a system-wide music and playlist manager as the Photos app is, for instance, for iOS.
Question. So thank you, Steve. Question two, with 19 upvotes, comes from the UK, London, Andreas Lindstrom. What do you think Johnny Ive talked about when he hinted they're working with new types of materials in that New York Times Bits blog interview? They're working with liquid metal.
Unobtainium. Yep.
Anything. He loves materials, right? That's his big thing.
Yeah.
I think it's basically
sapphire.
Sapphire, curved glass. I think that if Apple does do something that translates to an actual watch as opposed to a fitness band, I think we're going to learn a lot about what is driving Apple design right now. What materials fascinate them at this point that they haven't really worked with yet?
Well, and I think as you get into wearables, I mean, the wearables are so challenging. I think you're going to end up with a lot of innovation in the way we build things, because it's just not going to be something you can just put. You know, clump some raw material together to make it work.
Especially if you want it to be as good for women as it is for men. So,
right.
Unobtainium is very good for women and men.
Yeah, I hear.
Adamantium, too.
Adamantium, they're unobtainium, they're all fabulous.
Figured out how to plasticize dragon tears. they're having yield problems. They lose about 100 engineers for every gram that they can harvest, but they're working on it.
I forgot, Leo, one thing I did notice in iOS 8 Beta 2 is that the podcast app, at least in this beta, is default. It's no longer from the App Store, so that should benefit all of us.
You don't have to download it. It's just on there. That's good.
Yeah.
That answers Chris Peachman's question, what's new in iOS Beta 2? It's so new that I don't think some of us don't know what it is because we're not signing NDAs. Other of us signed NDAs and can't speak.
Well, the NDA is different this year. Remember, you just can't do screenshots, videos, or reviews. But you can talk about speak.
All right. Yep. Well, but and then finally, anybody who has it just got it. So.
Yeah, and right now Twitter is flooded with people announcing new features that Apple announced, 2 weeks ago. Sort through that. First.
Yeah.
It's too early.
It's fun to watch everybody try to be the first to break a story. Jason Snell tweeted, like, "Am I the first to say that the energy saver icon is now an LED bulb instead of a complex fluorescent?"
Well, finally, it's about time.
That's a Tim Cook innovation.
Yeah. According to the release notes, Safari will now block ads from automatically redirecting to the App Store without user interaction.
Yes, that is true.
Also,
people aren't familiar with that.
Go ahead.
So yeah, because this was horrible. There would be ads, and they would sneak into Google, which everyone uses, you know, across the internet. And you would go to a web page on a mobile browser, and it would immediately shoot you to the App Store.
That's not good.
And as a publisher, we couldn't stop it either because we had no way of knowing which ads right. had it, and it was a huge pain. And I hope Google and Chrome, you know, do this immediately as well.
That just fixes a bug, it sounds like.
Well, they were exploiting the way URLs worked in the system. So
URL should automatically launch ever.
No.
Ever.
Yes.
That's a hazard in many, many ways. In fact, I'm surprised that
Well, I mean, pop-ups.
Chrome does that on the on iOS?
I don't know. I mean, I want this feature everywhere.
No, I think that was a bug in Safari. I don't think
it might have been, but also like there's a lot of you start giving people the ability to launch pop-ups and they start embedding URLs in that. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can game systems.
Yeah. App Store purchases apps in the App Store purchased tab. This is all from by the way from Mac Rumors. They're working as fast as they can. They probably have 15 people going, hey, look, apps in the App Store's purchase tab are once again sorted by purchase date. Yeah. QuickType keyboard now available on the iPad. Brightness, toggle, messages. All this is, you know, little. Is it more stable? That's the question. And I guess you really won't know that until you use it for a while. Was beta 1 kind of rocky?
Stay away. Well, iOS 7, as much as people complained, most of it was a paint job. It was a new design. Things worked very similarly. Now with extensibility and with all the other features, the underlying stuff has changed a lot. And, you know, apps had very unpredictable behavior. A lot of your favorite apps might not have worked the way you wanted them to. And right. I don't ever think it's, you know,
that's
classy
normal.
To complain about bugs for a
that's
beta.
That's how it is.
But when they say don't put beta software on your primary phone, they really do mean that this time.
How about this one?
That really
one?
Is a question people are asking.
How about this one? This, I think, is interesting, but maybe you all have heard of this before. There is a new home data section within the privacy settings. Applications that have requested access to home data. Is that the home automation stuff?
Yeah, HomeKit.
Interesting. That's interesting. So it sounds like, much like HealthKit, there'd be a repository of...
And you can decide what you're sharing data with.
Well, this Hue app wants to affect my Hue lights.
Much like you have.
Can they do that?
Much like do these apps have access to your cellular or you know that type of thing?
Good.
Yeah. Your buzzsaw would like to access iPhone Leo.
Let's not do that. I have, by the way, and I didn't get around to doing it. I was supposed to do it for before you buy today. A robotic lawnmower sitting on my lawn right now.
There's a whole lot of
that seems dangerous. That seems like a bad idea.
You know, we used to when I was a kid. We had a field in the back that they would cut with the Whirly, and the Whirly is this big thing that you put in the back
like
of a tractor.
Basically, a grain reaper.
And we all had to go inside when the Whirly was running because it would throw rocks a solid 200 meters.
And if you go anywhere near the Whirly, it'll cut off whatever body part is extended.
Yeah, it was pretty good. You'd be amazed at what you could do with your brush. That's all I'm saying.
With what?
You go through brush.
Through brush. Yeah. Oh, I thought you meant like hairbrush. Like, were you throwing objects at the world?
No. You'd be going through the brush. You'd hit brush and small animals, all kinds of other stuff. It would just boop, and that's it. That was it.
What is new? Ben asks in Yosemite Beta 2, and I guess too early to really talk about that too.
To play with it a bit, I'm sure the internet is filled with it. But again, the problem I'm having is that people are announcing things that aren't new as new, so it's hard to sift through.
You know, give us some time. Just give us some time. Next, going to space.
Also, but photo booth is back. If you were worried about photo booth,
it's
back.
Oh, hallelujah. They'd be crazy to take photo booth out. That is the one thing that everybody, when they're demoing a Mac, immediately launches. Look at this. From Nathan, Houston, Texas. Would you recommend Swift as a first language for an aspiring programmer?
No.
Nope.
I think if you've never programmed before, I think you start with Ruby. Because it's an interactive language. There are tutorials that can actually have you typing live code and executing it as you go. It's simpler, and you will also come out once you spend 2 or 3 months learning Ruby. Not only will you have a useful language under your belt, but also you will have learned about object-oriented programming. You will have learned about the data structures you need to know, and you'll also have learned about the idea of I've got this task that I want to turn into a program. How do I break that down into modules and steps?
Ruby or Python, I think, also
machine
a
language.
Very good
I think it's all about machine language.
Yeah, you know what? Assembly is not hard to learn, and it does teach you how computers
work. It's a lot about structure.
Yeah,
get eight toggle switches, hook them up by USB, and just click, 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 send.
Yes,
click, 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 send. Yeah.
Swift card, is sir. The reason people think that, and we talked about it, of course, is this wonderful playground feature, which is really an advanced debugger that lets you, you know, kind of scroll through your program, find a point, change a variable, see the result. And especially for graphical programming, that's great. It certainly would be good. My reason for not recommending it is it's not cross-platform. Well, it's beta, which means stuff's going to change. As Ed Bott pointed out, it's not a finished spec, but also it's not cross-platform. And to me, if you want to really start to learn programming, you should learn on something that is going to work everywhere in a similar way.
And I really like the
it's mature. You're right, Andy.
The advantage of the playground is really the feedback loop because
that's
awesome. Because in what I do, you know, a lot of times with 3D, everything is about how many iterations, how many times do you get to see what you did over and over and over again, and it really changes the way you look at every variable because you really have enough iterations, enough samples to really build a picture.
Right. Anthony Perry, will we see a refreshed iMac? New design? Someday? Yes. Tomorrow?
Yes.
No.
We had a major redesign just last year, and Apple doesn't care enough about that. Apple doesn't think the iMac is important enough to freshen it every single year like an iPhone or an iPad. Right. So I think it's going to be at least a year till we see a real new iMac.
Same question for the Mac Mini. Dale in Seattle, is the Mac Mini dead?
No.
No.
You will see a speed bump and maybe a price drop for the iMac, though, and the Mac Mini will go to Haswell.
They can do both of those without an announcement.
Intel starts delivering those chips.
By just changing the store.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I'm keen to see if Apple's going to bother to redesign the case, though. Or rather, if they're just going to maintain it as a look, what can we do with a square box with rounded edges? People are not buying this as a sexy product. They're hiding in closets anyway, but we'll definitely maintain it with new hardware.
If Leo would just buy one, the rest of us could have the new one.
I am so happy with the Mac Pro, I'm not buying anything. Love it with a 4K display.
That's why we don't have the new one, Leo.
That's it. Sorry. How about an Apple TV, a new Apple TV set-top box?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yep.
Someday.
Absolutely this year.
This year.
Soon.
Yep.
Soon. Fall. Last question from Mr. Joshua, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Andy, we appreciated your pieces on Android last year. Does the new direction and philosophy for Apple mean that you might be switching back to iPhone in the fall?
Stronger than might. I think that if Apple produces a large screen iPhone, it's like I said really right after the keynote, I will be almost out of reasons to keep on using Android. There's still some things that Android does that I think are exceptional that I haven't seen in iOS 8. But really, in terms of a phone that lets me customize it, that has apps that work together, that has a screen that's flexible for movie viewing and reading stuff long term, it really is as though they took that series of articles I wrote last year, put it on a whiteboard and said, okay, that's our goal for iOS 8. Get this one user back.
Because that's what they did, of course. You know,
it's
they were
not
like,
going to be 5 inches.
We want his $200.
It's not going to be 5.5. It's not going to be 6 inches. It's going to be 4.7, right?
4.7 and 5.5.
And 5.5.
Yeah, if they can get the panels in time, yeah.
Well, I'd be really interested in something that big.
Which would you go for, Andy? 4.7 or 5.5?
I'd have to feel them both. 4.7, I think, is a current real sweet spot.
Me too.
The current iPhone 5 screen, it really does seem too small.
Yeah.
But if a 5.5, depending on how it feels in my hand, I'm not the sort of I don't wear it on my wrist. I don't have to. I don't carry a little makeup purse, so I can have something that, as long as it fits in a shirt pocket and without a good chance of tumbling out or tearing my sleeve. I think that I would go for the larger one.
I really like this. Is the Moto X, which is to me this is the phone you got to beat, and that's 4.7. That it just fits the hand naturally.
Yeah.
Feels like the right
and
size.
This is the Nexus 5, and it's a little bit larger than that.
It's 5 inches, still, a little too big.
I don't know. There are a lot of 4.7 and 5. I like the 5-inch screen, maybe because a lot of what I use my phone for is it sits there in my dashboard on my car. And I don't need a center console TV or screen to do it. And this is a nice display that doesn't require me to be going like
the funny thing. Here's an iPhone 5. This is Alex's iPhone 5S. Is that a 5S? Yeah.
No, it's just
it's a 5. Okay. Compared to the 4.7, you see, it's not so much bigger, the Moto X, but just a little scooch.
You know, to wider. Both of your points, I think people forget, like, this is the Nexus 5 and the Lumia 1020. And the Lumia, they have the same screen size, but the Lumia 1020 feels much bigger and way heavier in my hand.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how the entire package influences not just the screen size.
Well, and I find there's a lot of things. I have an HTC One, which I like. But for there's a lot of things like working out and doing other things that I don't, it's too big.
Yeah, the new one is 5.
So they have that new little one or whatever.
Oh, you have the mini.
No, I have the big one.
Yeah. No, the HTC, the M8.
Yep, the M8. That's what I have.
That's normally what I carry. I think that's 5.
Yeah, but it's just that. Like, it's too much for a lot of things that I do.
Thank you for your questions, everyone. We have our picks of the week coming up in just a little bit. But first, a word for, you know, we talk about Shutterstock a lot, and they have a new product, a new brand called Offset that I think is really cool. I want you to visit offset.com/welcome/MacBreak because you get a little welcome. What is it? Well, it's the same idea as Shutterstock. It is royalty-free photos and illustrations, but this is top-quality editorial and commercial artists. So what you're getting is very high-quality images from people whose work is featured in magazines like Martha Stewart, Condé Nast, Traveler, National Geographic, big advertising campaigns. This is stuff suitable for framing. If you're looking for editorial photography, editorial illustrations that are super high quality, Offset is the place to go. Award-winning artists, authentic imagery, all royalty-free. That is just, is that Iguazu? I think that's Iguazu Falls. Gorgeous stuff. This is all new, too. This is not stuff you've seen before on Shutterstock. It's curated from award-winning artists around the world. There's much simpler pricing and licensing than you've probably ever experienced before, and this includes global usage rights. Offset.com if you want to browse around, and when you want to just try to set it up for yourself so you can, for free, no credit card needed, go to offset.com/welcome/MacBreak. Pricing is very straightforward. This is for global usage. $250 for shots for the web, $500 for high resolution shots suitable for print. So you could, and these are for these photographers, $500 and you can print it out and put it on your wall is amazing. And all royalty free. That's Miriam Bleeker, who's a really amazing photographer. Her work has appeared in Condé Nast, Traveler, Lonely Planet. She's a you know, one of those world traveler types. Her, she lives in Amsterdam, but you'll find images from Miriam all over the world. Great. Look at this stuff. So it's a new brand from Shutterstock and one I think you're going to like a lot. Offset.com/welcome/MacBreak. And we thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Get your free account. Find an image that tells your story at offset.com/welcome/MacBreak. Andy Inoko, your pick of the week.
This is an unusual pick for me. Usually I pick something that I've used and tested and really recommend. This time I'm recommending something that I hope a friend of mine buys so that I can actually play with it and see if it works, because it sounds like the coolest thing ever. It's called the Mello sous vide cooker.
Oh, I guess I know who will buy that.
Hey,
yeah, Mr. Sous vide sitting next to me.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, you know what a sous vide cooker is? It's an immersion cooker where there's a pump, there's a heater and a pump in a vessel of water. You put the food in a bag and it circulates heated water around it. So it cooks chicken for like 9 hours, but brings it to it cooks it at a safe lower temperature. So it's all moist and delicious. And basically, if you have a friend who has one of these sous vide cookers, it's like having a friend with a Tesla. Every conversation goes around to, oh, well, last week I decided to sous vide a side of beef and it took 1100 hours and I had some chives in there.
This is a little bit different.
So this is like a crock pot slash sous vide.
It's beautiful.
Not only does it have a heater and a circulator, but it also has a chiller.
Those are bad ones.
It also has a chiller in it, so that what you can do is you can basically prepare your food, put them in the bags, put it in the water, and then leave for work. And at the cooker will basically keep that food, the raw materials at refrigerated temperature until you've told it that I want to, this is a chicken breast with vegetables. I want to eat at 6 p.m. So it will keep it refrigerated in the water all day long until it's time to start it cooking. And so if you tell it that you want dinner to be ready at 6, dinner will be ready at 6. It will start the cooking process at the right time so that the food will be cooked and ready to eat at 6.
The key with sous vide is very low temperature, very slow
It's not necessarily low temperature.
Alex does this all the time.
Yeah, I've learned that it does annoy people if I talk about it all the time, so I've slowed down.
But now, a lot of the sous vide cookers we've talked about before are like things you put in a pot and stuff that.
I have one that's
this is an all-in-one unit. It looks like kind of like a water dispenser.
It's much prettier than mine.
It's also controllable by the iPhone.
Well, that is the big, like, being able to tell at what time you want it to
and
be ready.
And refrigeration.
I know. The
how much is this? Wait a minute. I got to check. Okay.
Retail price is $500. If you pre-order it, it's $400.
That's not bad.
It's not the same price as the one I bought. Year.
That's not bad.
But it's controlled by my iPhone. If this was available when I bought mine, I would have.
I'm ordering it right now.
Yeah, I'm going to order one too.
It's like
you too.
Of course. I was going to get another one anyway because when you have a party, you have one set of meat at one temperature, and then you want to have another set of meat at another temperature. So I was already ready to invest in more sous vides and at least one more.
See this, but for me it's different because like there's a reason why I keep like frozen dinners like in the freezer. I try not to eat frozen dinners like lean cuisines every single night, but there, you know how the day goes in such a way where you're just working and then you realize, oh wait, it's 8 o'clock and I haven't had dinner yet. I don't want to then spend an hour cooking. I just want to go downstairs where someone has prepared me a dinner and I can have it in 3 minutes. And if I had one of these, I feel as though before I start working for the day, I could just dump whatever I want to have for dinner in 7 hours in there and just simply wait for a voice to come from my phone that is similar to my mom's voice saying, Andy, dinner!
Sous vide's ready!
It looks beautiful.
I want that experience from like when I was a kid where I could just do whatever I want and just be told that dinner is ready.
This is very intriguing.
The only sous vide bacon.
And I got to say, as soon as you start sous vide in your eggs, they show an egg there. You know,
soft boiling,
it is. Oh, it is so good.
I closed it. I gotta say,
it's so good.
Sold.
And I use these little. You know, remember the little cocktail glasses that I brought to your 4th of July?
Loved those.
So I use those, and then I take the little soft boiled thing, and I pop it in there, and I put a little salt on it. Very good.
And then sometimes if you're making meat or fish, you would maybe grill it real quickly just to give it a little crust.
At the very end. Now, what I'll do is I'll usually use my big green egg and get it up to, you know, sear it on the outside you know, and then it's...
Okay. Rich Siegel is the one of a bare bones software. He's the one who told me about Mello at the end of a conversation where he was excited about this Kickstarter product for exactly what you're talking about. It is essentially a blowtorch designed to do nothing, just to sear things that come out of the sear. Right.
You know, like I found
Gus Mueller's the demo video cooker. Where they got this big butane torch and they're essentially painting a caramelized crust onto this steak.
Once you go down this road of buying expensive kitchen gadgets, it really never ends.
Yesterday, Gus Mueller was tweeting out his rocket pizza oven, which cooks an entire pizza in like 45 seconds. There's no limit.
There really is no limit to what you might do. Well, now I've pre-ordered it, and I'm going to blame you, Andy.
Me too.
Yeah.
There you go.
You too?
See my
sous vide party. Everyone's invited.
Sous vide party.
My trick has worked. I now have a friend who definitely has one of those things coming and can tell me about how well it works.
Seems like $400 is not horrible. I like the idea that it refrigerates because then it's safe to leave it in, like leave your meat in there.
And then waking it will up to eggs, Leo.
Waking up to soft-boiled eggs. Are they really better than if you did them in a little pot with boiling water?
I just said you don't have to think about it. So what happens with the eggs is I just throw them in, and then I go back to whatever I was doing. Then I come back like 15 minutes later or 20 minutes later, and they're perfect every time.
What about the chemicals in the plastic in the bag? Because you're putting it in a sealed, vacuum-sealed bag, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that bad? Isn't it going to leach BPH out of there or something?
No, technically they say it's not BPH, but there's lots of things in plastic. We eat so much stuff that's in plastic, I'm not sure if it makes any difference.
I just don't know if I want to add more plastic to my diet.
I just don't think I'm adding a significant amount of plastic to my diet. I have plastic in my eyes every morning.
Look, we're all going to get cancer. It's just a matter of when. Is that what you're saying?
We're all going to die somehow.
You may as well enjoy a nice soft-boiled egg before you get cancer and die.
Wish you could sous vide the bacon to go with it.
Well, I don't put the egg in
there. Can you sous vide bacon?
I don't think it would work.
I don't think it would be very good.
When crisp up, right?
Yeah.
Tragedy.
All right. Thank you, Andy, for spending my money. And apparently Renee's as well.
Yes.
See, look, there it is. Hold on.
Renee, what would you like us to spend money on?
So I have a pick and an anti-pick, which is the only thing way I can term it. So my pick of the week is Launch Center Pro, which is one of my favorite iOS apps. It's now available for the iPhone and the iPad. Got a big update. And one of the primary things in this update is if it supports. So if this, then that.
Oh, nice.
this is basically an action launcher, because in the days before extensibility, there was no way to do internet communications, and they did a lot of really smart things with URL schemes and X callback URLs. And they're adapting for the future of extensibility. But in the meantime, you can use this now to trigger all sorts of really, really clever procedures you have stored on IFTTT. And if you are a high order bit geek, then that is an incredibly attractive proposition for you. So it's not a brand new app, but it is a brand new update. It's free to everyone who already has it. And if you don't have it, you can get it for iPhone and iPad.
Awesome stuff.
Really productive. My anti-pick is this thing called Slingshot, which Facebook introduced right before the show that I spent a few minutes looking at.
Oh, it came out.
It is basically Snapchat. But if Leo sends me a picture, I have to send back a picture to Leo before I can look at the picture Leo sent me.
Stupid.
Which sounds like the worst possible app I can imagine.
Why is Facebook having so much trouble? That they created Poke to duplicate Snapchat, right? Or no? Yeah.
No, they did. I mean, they have some of the best. They have Mike Mattis. He did the photo app and the camera app on the original iPhone. He did, Delicious Library. He's creating paper. He didn't do this app, but I don't understand. It's like Facebook figures out what apps we don't want and then rushes them through the pipeline.
They're just brilliant. And in fact, they've done the same thing with the news feed, where it's just crap now. Okay. Well, thank you. Don't buy Slingshot. Oh, it's free, I'm sure.
It's free, but it takes your sanity. It costs you your sanity.
Your attention is not free, my friend. Mr. Alex Lindsay. What do you got?
I don't think I've recommended this before. People keep on asking about it because they've seen me talk about it a little bit. So this is what I travel with. My recommendation is for the Seagate. This is the Thunderbolt adapter.
Yes.
This thing is awesome. All right. So
is it Thunderbolt 1 or 2?
Thunderbolt 1.
Yeah.
Okay, what it's designed for is Seagate makes these little drives that you put onto it. I know they're completely useless as far as I'm concerned. But the adapter by itself is like $100. Now, what you do is you take this, see this little SSD?
Yeah.
And now, because it's all it is a SATA connection. So it doesn't really matter what it is. And you take this SSD, any SSD, and then you slide it on. And now you have a whatever size your SSD is, 120, 256, 480, whatever gigabyte hard drive. Now, what I do is it doesn't fit perfectly because it had a hard drive. So I take old hotel keys, which I have a lot of, and I tape them. See
perfect.
Right here, little pad.
Just the right size.
I had to figure out something to do with all those hotel keys. It turns out they're great as shims. So anyway, so then you pop it on. Now, if you're going to leave it on, a lot of times I tape, I just put a little gaff tape on the outside here and then I name it whatever I want. And the big thing is that it does get a little extra attention by TSA, I will admit. Taped things that look technology and taped are a little
trouble. Yeah, it looks like a bomb.
But anyway, but the cool thing is that now you hook it up to your Thunderbolt and you transfer an entire 256 gig drive to another 256 gig drive in like 8 minutes. So it's the super fast way to back up stuff, download it. Most importantly for me, because I travel a lot, is most of the places that I work, I can at least find someone that sells SSDs. So what I do is if I want a really fast, these really fast drives to edit from and so on and so forth on the road, I can throw all my footage on here. It's really, really fast. And when it fills up, I just go to a store and I buy another SSD and I slide this one out and I put another one in. And it's just the cheapest, fastest way to have a really fast solution that's in your backpack that you can edit on the road and do all kinds of things that normally would require a lot of local hard drive space. So I use it to kind of swap SSDs all the time.
So now all you need is a computer that can use Thunderbolt.
Yes, which is all my computers use Thunderbolt. I will say one thing about that is that most of these, I'm told, by relatively good sources, John Tatulli's at Sound Devices, that these SSDs are only rated for about 150 insertions. They're not really built to do what I'm doing. So I don't, other than what I'm showing to you on TV, which I'm shortening its life, I'm sure right now, it's not like I pull these out and put them on all the time. I really tape them up and use them, and then when I need to, I pop them out. But, even then, I think they would last as long as a spinning drive would last with me anyway. So anyway, that's just the one disclaimer at the end of that. But
that's
it is
like a physical limitation of the connector.
The connectors just aren't really built for that. Yeah. They're not, these connectors here just aren't really, they're not really built to be slid in and out. They were designed to be inserted and left. So anyway, that's the, that is it. But anyway, it's a useful, hopefully someone finds that useful.
Did I mention Reader 2 recently? I think I mentioned it last week, but I don't know if I showed it. Reader, R-E-E-D-E-R for the Macintosh. It's a really good feed reader, and version 2 just came out. And I'm not sure. I think it's $5, $10. But if you still, and I will not let RSS die, if you're still looking for a great RSS reader, the good news is thank you, Feedly, for keeping Google Reader alive. Because I attached my Google Reader account to Feedly, I can now easily log in. Let's look at Apple Stories. I can scan through stories very quickly. It has nice sharing capabilities, you know, that support all of the kind of different sharing services you might use. I use Pinboard, but Delicious, Twitter, Facebook, mail a link, message a link, copy a link, and put it in some other application. It is. Thank God there is still a good RSS reader out there. You can add a Feedbin, Feedwrangler, Fever account. You can connect it to your Pocket. Readability, those different services. You can add them, you know, any of these services, quite a few services to it. I just like it. R-E-E-D-E-R-2 came out. R-E-E-D-E-R-2. You've played with it, right, Renee?
Yep,
terrific. I think we talked about it last week.
Last week, Renee brought up Unread.
iOS, and yeah, I love Unread for iOS.
Right, and you brought up Reader.
And I mentioned Reader, but I didn't show it to you. Here it is if you want to, you know, take a look. I have been using it pretty much nonstop to prepare for shows now, and it's a really great reader. And you can also subscribe to podcasts in it if you should choose.
One of the nice things about RSS is in iOS 8, and I think in Yosemite 2, Apple's they killed a RSS reader in Safari a while ago, but they've now
allowed
you to start. They brought back a version of it that's actually really clever.
What does that mean? Is that that I don't? It's I think it's encouraging, but I'm not sure why they decided to do that.
Why they killed it, or why they brought it?
Why
back?
They brought it back? I understand why they killed it. Everybody's killing RSS. RSS is dead, right?
I think because the framework that they created that lets you do basically the read later stuff inside Safari is a better mechanism for it than the original RSS tabs were, because now you can put it sort of in your reading list.
Yeah,
it's sort of a really good mental fit for that model.
Right. I agree with that. Basically, Safari used to be an RSS reader. Now you just use the RSS feeds to save stuff to your read it later.
And I have to admit, Flipboard really kind of
Flipboard, Twitter,
me.
A lot of things have replaced RSS.
But Flipboard more than anything else.
But see, this is the difference this is the use case. So I have my Apple section here, and I've added I have to update this, but I've added all the different sources, Apple Insider, Ars Technica, mm-hmm. Mac Center, iMore.com, you know, 9to5, all of them. And then I go to the Apple stories, and these are the unread stories, and I can so quickly scan through those stories. Mm-hmm. If I want to get the full story, I just click the link. It's got a built-in browser so I could see the link, and then I can share it very easily. So this fits what I do, which is go through a lot of news sources.
Triage,
trying to find stuff. But if you have an area of interest, you create a folder with the 10 websites that you like.
No, I spent...
That's just a different use case.
This is how I researched shows for...
For years.
Yeah, at least...
Flipboard's a little more, you know, kind of random. It's fun.
But when you're subscribing to specific people's feeds, I think that, you know, or specific groups, Mac News or that type of thing, I think you get... You don't have as much control, I will say. You don't have quite the same flow.
It's more comfortable. It's more like reading a magazine.
It's easier to do while I'm standing in the airport.
But it's not a power tool. This is a power tool.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I like the ability to target a specific news source, which is something that Flipboard doesn't let me do. If I want to go to what new notes has Apple posted today?
Right.
Am I up to date on that? As opposed to hopefully that in the midst of every other piece of Apple news from every other blog that Flipboard is assembling from, if the fact that I don't happen to have seen a tech note from Apple, that maybe that does that mean there's one there, or does that mean that I just haven't seen it?
Thank you, everybody. We're out of time. I want to thank you, Alex Lindsay, for being in studio with us next week.
Yes, and by the way, so Thursday, we're trying this whole Final Cut virtual user group. So it is, and I believe it's bit.ly/FCVUG. So bit.ly slash...
That sounds dirty.
FC Final Cut virtual user group. So it's
hug yourself.
The event page is actually on our question system, because we're going to be really so. What basically we've got great experts, of course. Steve and Mark are going to be up here, but we're going to bring a couple guys up from LA, and basically we're going to be there for people to ask questions. So you know, if you have if you've got questions about Final Cut 10, this is a Final Cut 10 virtual user group. This is a this is a place for you to ask it. And so it's an experiment. We'd love to have people, you know, come check it out. Let us know what you think of it. The idea is a user group where instead of having you be a fly on the wall watching a user group in the from the back, you're actually, it's all of us just talking and answering questions that are coming in from the question system and so on and so forth. So we hope to keep on building on that. If you're interested, and it's bit.ly, I'm sorry, it's bit.ly FCVUG VUG dash one.
Very be nicely the first one. Done, by the way.
Yeah,
that was good.
Did that really
did you do
fast.
That with Quicksilver? Quicksilver is great for big text.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks to, by the way, the Questions on Air creator who wrote this Heroku app that is fabulous. I assumed it was Ruby because it was in Heroku, but I guess it's JavaScript and Node.js. And your name again?
Sab Gottspun.
Very nicely done. Andy, thank you so much for doing it. And we love using it. We really appreciate it. Thanks to Renee Ritchie, imore.com. Good to have you here.
Can I mention something
time.
Really quickly?
Yes.
So starting tomorrow on Debug, we're going to have a multi-part series. It might be two or three parts, but Guy English and I got a chance to sit down with Nitin Ganatra, who started at Apple on DTS, then went to System 7, then worked on the early versions of OS 10, and then finally worked on the super secret iPhone project and retired as director of iOS apps at Apple.
Nice.
So he has some fantastic, you know, if you're a history buff, he has some fantastic stories.
imore.com/debug tomorrow. Yeah. By the way, speaking of tomorrow, I didn't mention this, but we're going to find out what Amazon has up its sleeve. We'll be doing our broadcast at 10:30 in the morning Pacific time. That's 2:30 p.m. Eastern time, 17:30 UTC. Matthew Ingram will join me, Mike Elgin. If any of you guys want to stop by and talk about it, that would be great. This phone is this Amazon announcement is apparently a 3D phone on AT&T.
Whoa.
It'll work great in Canada.
Yeah. I think AT&T is not yet in Canada, but
no.
Stay tuned. They seem to be gobbling everybody else up. And thank you so much, Andy Iannacco, for being here from the Chicago Sun-Times. And what is the name of that province? Wawanawa? Wawan?
I expect to find out. As a matter of fact, like while during commercial break, I was checking my email, and I'm apparently now a semifinalist in the Amtrak residency program. So if I do get that, maybe I'll just use my free Amtrak trip to go check that out and ask where my royalty ticket is.
So what are they doing? They're putting writers in residence on trains? Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, apparently that this is. I applied a couple months ago when they tweeted this out. So if you're a writer, you can apply to say, "Well, here's I'm a writer. If I get to ride Amtrak, I'll not necessarily write about the experience, but I'll be blogging about what I'm going to be doing and what I'm and the projects that I'm working on." So I wrote a nice little application and say, "Here's what here's the sort of trip that I would like to take, and here's what I would do with it." And if I don't exactly have Justin Bieber social media numbers, but apparently it's high enough to qualify for whatever they're hoping to do for it. I'm a big fan of Amtrak, and I've been blogging about and tweeting about it like since way before Twitter and stuff like that. So, in all seriousness, I do hope I get this because it'd be fun to do. It'd be fun. I've always wanted to do an overnight. I've always wanted to do sleeper car service on Amtrak, where you have this little room that you can be out there with people, but then when you don't want to be with people anymore, you can just be in this little room and close the door, and you have a bed. And
oh, so it's
table.
A sleeper. This is not. You're not going to be sitting up.
Well,
all night.
I don't know. This is the sort of things I was talking about. This is the experience that I would love to do. I basically want to be Michael Palin, only American and not quite so distinguished or intelligent.
I think it sounds marvelous, my friend. Marvelous.
Only semifinalist, but
dude, can we vote? Can we support you by going to some site and saying yes, pick Andy?
I'm hoping that will happen. I was just checking my email during the during the commercial break, and that really got my attention immediately. So now I have to click a link and basically say yes, please continue to consider me for a residency. But yes, but believe me, if there is a social media component, I am absolutely not above exploiting the massive and influential Twitter audience to get me into that train ride to Manitoba or whatever.
So we will be once again broadcasting live with Amazon's announcement 10:30 Pacific. I'm sorry, that's 1:30 Eastern time. Got that wrong. 17:30 UTC tomorrow. A little program note, if you missed Marketing Mavericks this morning with Tanya Hall, what an interesting show. She had Arthur Chu, the guy who gamed Jeopardy, on. The subject of the show was building a personal brand after reality TV. So she's got a bunch of reality TV stars, including Arthur Chu, on the show this morning. It was really fascinating. Highly recommend it. twit.tv/mm. It's up now if you want to watch that. Thanks for joining us. But now I must say, get back to work. Unless you want to stay around for security now, that's coming up. But otherwise, break time is over.